When you're in like 10th and 11th grade, nobody knows how to like speak professionally in front of a camera.
Right.
But here I was like looking like, I don't know. Like,
collared shirt. Yeah, standing
collared shirt. Yeah. Like I'm on the Late Show, like yeah. talking about Seaford Hats. Like.
Thanks for coming on.
No, thank you for having me. I'm pumped.
Yeah. So last season, how'd it go?
It was a bit of an up and down year. I'd say the most challenging year, like definitely thus far in my career. So it was USF 2000. Okay. The naming system's a little bit complicated.
You're going to have to explain that to me.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the second step on the rung to IndyCar. So okay. It's USF Juniors,
okay.
USF 2000,
yep.
USF Pro 2000.
Okay, and that's a totally different series than UF. Okay.
And then Indy Next, which was known as Indy Lights for like forever.
Okay, so that's like Atlantic, Indy Lights.
Bingo.
Indy Next, it's called now. Got it.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
So you're two below that?
Yeah exactly.
Okay. And then do you guys race all of the same races as IndyCar?
No, so we had two events that weren't with IndyCar, but okay. most of them, you know, were on like the feature weekends, which was cool.
Yeah, for sure. And do a lot of those guys, like, you know, even maybe, you know, not actively, but just pass on wisdom or like mentor guys, like there is really this kind of road to Indy as opposed to really any other, you know, series doesn't have that much of a legitimate stepping stone program. Yeah. like the road to Indy.
There definitely are some guys that will come in and like, you know, talk with us. I think this series we'll try to bring them in for like, we'll just do driver's meetings, but have like, you know, ex-pros or guys that are in the series there. Yeah. I'm lucky enough to have myself kind of embedded with Hinch. Mm. So, I mean, he has been amazing for me. He's part of my management team. And whether it's, you know, on the track wisdom or off the track wisdom,
yep.
he's been really good. But I think the Road to Indy is a really solid program in terms of the way it preps you for the top level.
Yeah. Explain, I had Dalton Kellett on maybe last summer or the year before.
He's awesome.
And I didn't understand this. And like, it should be known throughout all of motorsports that if you, I don't know if it's still the case, but if you win the championship, the next season's paid for.
In a nutshell, yeah. That's like the kind of like basic, I guess, description of it.
Okay.
But there is a champion scholarship, which is awesome.
Because I think in each one of those levels.
Yes.
Okay.
So for example, in 22, I won the USF Juniors Championship.
Okay.
So I got a scholarship valued at $240,000 to race USF 2000 this past year.
Right. So that funded this past year.
Yes, but not entirely.
Okay.
So
what was the total budget say?
It gives you about half.
About half. So it's almost 400 grand.
You still need a lot.
Holy cow, dude.
Yeah, it's not easy. You still have to go out, you know, find partners, make sure you get on the grid. Like, I was the reigning champion in juniors, and I didn't even know if I was going to be on the grid the next year, right? Because we're still trying to find funding to make it to St. Pete.
Right. So you ended up finding all the money for last year, close
yes.
to it?
Yes. Yeah, okay. For sure.
Tell me about that, because that's, like, I know how hard it is, and, you know, at, you know, Canada's premier, you know, I can go sell the NASCAR Pinty Series. It's on TSN, da 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 da. It's NASCAR. But, you know, USF Junior or USF 2000, that might be a tougher sales pitch as a Canadian racing in the States.
Oh, 100%, because you're nowhere near home, right? We had one race in Toronto this year, the Toronto Indy, and it's the first time I've raced at home in like 3 years.
Right.
So it is definitely tough to pitch. And, you know, you have to kind of diversify yourself, right? You're looking for philanthropy, you know, personal sponsors as well as corporate guys that want to come on board. So, you know, we do our best to try to put together a good package, make it look, you know, as professional as we can, partnership decks, videos we put together, you know, personalizing things for people. And, you know, we've been fortunate so far. We found, you know, some good long-term partners, but we're always looking for more because
that's good.
As you keep going up, like the cost is exponential.
Right. So this past season, where'd you end up in the championship?
We were P4 in the championship, Dad. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Two wins in the season. And like I said, it was definitely, I think, my most challenging year yet.
Right. And then, so now, not winning the championship, the next step is pro?
Yeah, USF Pro 2000. Exactly. Just call it pro. That's like the easiest way to do it.
And what is, you know, you go to a top tier team. And are the top tier teams in there? Like, is Andretti all the way down there? You know, is Penske all the way down there?
No.
Okay.
So that's when, like, in Indy Next, like Indy Lights, that's kind of when they start having, like, their finger in the pot. Like, Andretti has a team.
Okay, right.
Yeah, so it's one more up. We'll be leveling up to USF Pro 2000 this next year for 2024. It actually just came out, like, the statement, like, last week or 2 weeks
ago. Got it. So you got a deal together.
Yeah.
Are you close on the funding?
No. That's a good question. But, yeah, to be honest, no, we have, you know, a good part.
Yeah.
But always looking for more, and we're going to need more if we want to finish the season for sure.
Right, and it's not actually. I was just chatting with Matt Williamson. You probably don't know him, Dirt Modified Racer, big block guy, and his podcast will come out next week. And like, he's got to be potentially making the most money as a Canadian race car driver, like period. Really? And like the struggles that. You know, any sports car guy has, any open wheel guy has, you know, I have, any NASCAR guy has, are just non-existent to someone like that, where it's like, you know, he's racing for 50 grand to win. It costs him, he figures it's $10 a lap, you know, it's a 50 lapper, something like that, right? Like, and this guy's making great money. Whereas, you know, for that, like, what is the budget for pro? And like, I guess where I was getting with that is, say, you know, someone like that, or in certain series, okay, we're halfway there. If we win 7 races, we're even. You guys don't have crazy prize money.
No, we have money, like I said, at the end of the championship for the champion, and that's it, right? So, for example, on the juniors year, I figure with the scholarship that I won, like, we about broke even.
Right.
But it's not really breaking even because you're just putting it into the next year of racing.
For sure.
So it's tough in that aspect. But no prize money to win in terms of racing. I think in Indy Next there is. They kind of break it down that way. Because Roger bought it back. Like, it's owned by Penske Entertainment now.
Okay.
So it's more of like the IndyCar type feel.
But right.
It's definitely a lot different than that world.
Man, so, yeah. And again, even that open wheel deal is a little bit different than, you know, sports car racing or something else, because there is this set ladder and you're... A lot of the guys will find someone to invest in you as a driver, and you know, maybe the return isn't there now, but it will be in IndyCar. Mm-hmm. Do you have some partners like that?
Yeah, more or less, where there's guys looking for a return on their investment, right? Like, you've seen people do it in the past, like Scott Dixon. He's a Kiwi, great example of it. You know, one of the best IndyCar drivers we've seen ever. Yeah. I believe the way he did it is he sold shares of himself. He like opened, you know, Scott Dixon Racing or whatever it was, and he raised money that way. So it is a thing for sure. If in the open wheel world, people do, you know, sell a little bit of themselves, and you know, the investors will bank on like a return.
Are you thinking of doing that model ever?
It's, you know, there's been talk about it for sure. Yeah. Because it is worth it if, you know, you do make it to the top level and you start earning money, and then you can kind of pay it back and, you know, sell little pieces of your soul to get there. But
sure. But, you know, a piece of something's better than a piece of nothing, right?
Exactly. It's a good way of saying it. I like that.
Yeah. So you guys are close on the sponsorship. Well, let's go back. So where were you born? What was your childhood like? What did your dad do for a living? Your dad was in racing, obviously.
Yeah. But
yeah, explain that.
So I was born downtown Toronto at Women's College. I was like a mega preemie. So my parents always joke, like, I was always in a hurry. That's like the running joke. Growing up, I really didn't have any interest in racing at all until I was like 9 or 10 years old. My dad was an avid carter, for, you know, the people who don't know, more professional level karting is kind of a big thing, like, mm-hmm. especially on the European level or like in the US. So he represented Team Canada like 5 times.
Yeah.
Won the nationals. Like, you know, I don't like to toot his horn because it goes his head, but
yeah, went to the worlds a bunch of times.
He was good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that helped me a lot when I first started karting, to have someone to, you know, kind of feed off of. And as a dad, I mean, I'm sure you can speak on this. It's kind of weird, like a dad and son relationship in racing. And it can be like really heated, but also really, you know, you can have those wholesome, sweet moments too.
Yeah, dude, I, the best memories I have are being at the kart track with my dad. But it was probably a little different for me because my dad started racing pretty late in his life, and never, he did maybe 4 or 5 go-kart races as a kid, but didn't understand go-kart setup, any of that stuff. So like, we were both like learning the hard way,
cool.
like big time. Whereas like, you jump in and your dad knows exactly what to do as far as tuning on the cart. Like that must have been a pretty big advantage. Cause I guess, well, actually you're young enough. You would have started racing against like when I started racing, it was all father son teams. Like there's no, you know, there's no big tents, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas when you started racing, there was guys with real tuners there, like their carts were set up.
For sure. So when I first started, like obviously you start kind of like the club level, right? So I started at Waterloo Regional Kart Club in Flamborough.
But not in Flamborough. Yeah.
Oh, was at a different place?
It was at Bigamon.
No way. Yeah, yeah. Okay, I didn't know that.
99, 2000. It was up Kitchener.
That's wicked.
Yeah.
No, so I started there. And like you said, like a lot of father-son stuff. And I started when I was 11 years old. So like...
Why so late?
Dude, like, okay. I came to him when I was like... 9 and I was like, oh dad, like I want to give racing a try. He's like, well, aren't your friends like playing soccer this year? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, well, like go play soccer. Like he didn't want to like let me try.
He knew how smart, much work bro. It was. Yeah.
Stu had it figured out before he didn't.
Yeah.
And then I went back when I was like 10 and I'm like, no, dad, like come on, like I really want to try racing. And my mom was the one to chime in and be like, Stuart, like you have to let him try. Like you're racing, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So then I finally got into it when I was like 11.
So where'd you grow up? In Toronto? Do you guys live in Toronto?
Milton. Sorry. In Milton. Yeah, okay. Like I'm like literally hometown boy. So
okay, yeah,
born
yeah.
in Toronto. I never clarified. I've you know, lived in Milton my entire life.
So what was your childhood like? Like what does your dad do for a living or did for a living when you were young?
He started at Royal Pipe. He worked his way up, like literally started as a guy who was on the floor. All the way up to like sales. And then he actually branched off and started his own company the year before I was born, 2003, called Simplas. And he recycles like giant industrial plastic pipe.
Cool.
Yeah. That's what he does for a living.
Yeah. So you finally convince your dad you want to go go-kart racing. You guys start. How were those first couple years? Were you quick right away? Were you?
No.
You're behind the eight ball. You're 11 years old. Everyone else had started, or almost everyone else had started at 7 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it was a little bit rough for sure. Like I didn't. Had no ambition of being a race car driver. Was just there to have fun as a hobby on Saturdays with my pops. And by the end of my second year, you know, I was bringing in like regular podiums. And I'm like, Dad, like, I think I want to get more serious about this, you know? So following year, you run the Canadian Nationals for the first time. It goes well. And then I just feel like, you know, it's just gone like this. Like it's been exponential ever since.
Right. Pretty quick. How old are you now?
I'm 19.
19. So it's been 8 years and certainly not 8 years of karting.
Yeah.
So you get more serious, you know, start racing in the States. Mm-hmm.
So like in the span of 4 years, so I started in like 2014.
Yeah.
And then by 2018, early 2019, I'd won like my first big international race in the States.
Which was what?
SCUSA. It was like SCUSA Winter Series at Homestead.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you won that race. Were you running the whole season, SCUSA season?
I ran the Winter Series. I think I finished like third in the championship. And then I moved my focus to Formula 1600 car racing.
Okay.
So it was kind of like a quick rise, you know?
Yeah, that's super quick. Like super quick and impressive to go win. That's a big race for people who don't know.
Thank
like
you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So you win that and you're like, okay, there's something here. Is that, or just before that, like when did that kind of catalyze in your mind?
I think you hit like the nail on the head. It was kind of around that time where I start bringing in like these, you know, these big race podiums and then, you know, I win that race and all of a sudden it's like, man, like maybe I can drive. Maybe I like, this could really be a career for me. I hadn't really, you know, thought that going to IndyCar or being a real race car driver was obtainable up until that point.
Right.
And then, you know, you get that big win, your confidence kind of boosts and you're like, man, maybe I can do this.
For sure. So then what was the conversation like with your dad? You know, I want to be a race car driver. Yeah. Like, let's go to the next step.
He was always super supportive of it. And I have to like, not only shout out to him, but shout out to like my mom too. Cause without mom, like, let's be real. Like it's not happening. Right?
Right.
She has to be on board. And it was, kind of like that, like dad, you know, I think I can be a race car driver. You know, he believed in me and let's take it to car racing, see how it goes, you know. We can put together a budget for one season of Formula 1600 and then, you know, probably go to closed wheel, like IMSA competition. The goal was never open wheel, even when I jumped to Formula 1600.
Okay. Why? Because you saw there was opportunity in the sports car stuff, like, you know, to be a paid driver or at least get a ride?
I think getting a ride in sports car racing is a much more sustainable option than trying to go the open wheel route because there's so few seats and you have to pay your way so high.
Yeah.
Whereas the sports car aspect of things, you know, if you have talent and someone recognizes you, then maybe not easier, but it's just kind of different and seemed like the better option for us at the time.
Right. And the sports car stuff, like, yeah, you can have a pretty long life in it and you get in with the right, you know, if there's a pro-am deal, you get in with the right guy who's paying the bill anyways, you know, you're quick enough. One, he likes hanging out with you every weekend. That's a major factor too. too, and then, you know, you're his guy for maybe his entire career.
Exactly. You get that kind of like gentleman driver pairing, and then you're set, right? Or maybe like people always talk about the dream being like a factory gig, right?
Sure. So
like factory Porsche, factory Merc, that kind of thing. And that was the plan, like going into car racing, was to do, you know, 1 year in open wheel and then go off to close wheel stuff and see if I can make my living there. And then it all changed when I got an invite to the Richard Mille. Is like, do you know, like, it's
yeah,
a,
tell
like
me
luxury watchmaker.
Yeah, yeah.
Like super big thing, like.
Yeah, they spend bajillion dollars in racing.
The cheapest watch is like, I don't know. I don't even want to know. But yeah, and it's insane.
Sponsor F1 races every, you know, Le Mans, every track. Yeah.
Yeah. So they had a partnership with the chassis manufacturer that I was with in karting.
Okay.
And then I got an opportunity.
With Burrell?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then I got an opportunity to go overseas to pick 18 drivers that ran their chassis from around the world. We all went to like this young talent academy kind of thing.
Where?
Le Mans, France.
Cool.
Like we
at
raced.
That go-kart track.
No, dude, we ran F4 cars
on
the Bugatti circuit. It was incredible.
Cool.
Like, highlight.
So had you already raced 1600 at that point?
Yes.
Okay, so at least you'd been in a car.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
No, there was, like, kids testing on the track, like, in that car the week before. It was crazy. It was, like, this whole other world. And, I mean, it went well. I finished in the finals. And that's kind of when, you know, this idea got, you know, put out there that maybe I can make it in open wheel racing.
Right. That's cool. So what was that shootout for? Like, what did you win if you won that thing?
So if you won, you got a year paid in the FIA F4 French series, like in France.
Yeah.
I didn't win. There were six of us in the final, and they don't tell you where you place. So I could have been second. I could have been sixth. I don't know.
Right, right. And what was it based on, lap time or like just a judged?
It was like they were looking for the full package. So like they had us do like a 3-hour workout session. They had us do like mental training. They had us on track. Like it was like cool pro. Yeah, it was cool.
Very cool. So at that point you're like, okay, you know, there's something here. Like you're getting outside recognition. And I think that's big, you know, because you don't know. And it's like, okay, someone else thinks I might have it. Were you like, oh shit, maybe I'll go race in Europe?
Yes and no. I mean, that's like every kid's dream, right? It's like the F1 type European route. But I think I always knew that unless I had big outside support, that European racing just wouldn't be feasible.
Yeah.
Between like being born on the wrong side of the pond, starting too late, and not having the capital to do it.
Yeah.
It's like quickly turned into, okay, IndyCar's the focus, IndyCar's the goal.
Okay. So then you jump to what series after 1600s?
So I won the 2020, the COVID year, the Formula 1600 championship, and then...
And that's all in Canada?
That's all in Canada. Like, mostly, I think four of our rounds were at Mosport, and then we had, like, a Calabogie and a Shannonville.
So all Ontario?
Pretty much.
Okay.
And then after that, in terms of open wheel racing, I mean, there's nowhere to go in Canada, right? So,
yeah.
USF4, that's where I went for 2021. Went well, finished second in the championship, and then juniors in 22.
So USF4, is that part of the road to Indy?
No, so that's separate. That's like an FIA type thing. So they have like a USF4 sanctioned by the FIA, and then they have like a Formula Regional, which is kind of like F3.
Right, right, okay. So then, you know, you run that. Again, like, you know, how does that conversation go with your dad? Like, hey, you know, like, we got to move to the next step. It's a big chunk of money. You know, did you find sponsorship for that next year?
No, that was a lot of, you know, our budget for the past, like, I don't know, long time went into that season.
Right.
So that was all kind of him behind it, you know, finding a team to test with, seeing how it went. We went down in, like, December the year before after the 1600 championship, and I ran really well at a test day at Sebring.
Right.
And it was like, okay, like, you know, maybe we should look at running the championship. And we ran the championship, managed to make it all the way on funds. And we won the most races. I think I won like six races that year. So it was kind of like okay, you know, I knew I could do it in Canada, but can I do it outside? And
right.
Validation for me.
For sure. And so that was junior, right?
F4 and then juniors.
Yeah. So the junior deal, is that your first exposure to ovals?
No, we didn't run any ovals in juniors.
Okay.
My
first all road courses.
Year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you prep for... You know, you've raced road courses your whole life, and then all of a sudden now you're on ovals.
I'd always kind of been, like, exposed to it mentally just because, like, I have family that's in oval racing. So, I mean, I've always been fond of it, but definitely my first test in the oval was like the hardest day I'd ever had in a race car mentally. Like, it's just so different. People don't give oval racing enough credit. Like, they're just like, oh, like, just turn left. Like, it's so easy, blah, 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 blah. But it's not like that, man. It's really difficult. And I mean, I had a blast doing it.
Yeah. Did you struggle at all in the ovals? Or is I guess a lot of those kids are in the same boat because they're mostly coming from go-kart racing mm-hmm. as opposed to like, you know, USAC or something like yeah. that.
I'd say the opposite. So the Freedom 75 was what it was called this year. It was the Carbonite Classic, like the night before the 500 in Indianapolis.
Okay.
And we put it on pole, led all 75, and I won.
Nice.
So, like, hopefully this year goes well, too, and I can kind of label myself as, like, an oval guy.
Because okay.
I love it. Like, it's...
Wow. Yeah. It's, my first oval race... I got out of the car and I'm like, this is actually a different sport is yeah. what we're doing here. It's a completely crazy. Different sport. Like the amount of focus you need is insane. Maybe not at, you know, Indy compared to like a short little short track, but you have to be on it. Like every lap, you don't have a second to breathe and wiggle your fingers.
100% correct. Like our race was at LOR. So it's two-thirds mile.
Okay.
Two-thirds mile track. It's like a 22-second lap time in an open wheel car, and you're on the top because it's progressive banking,
wow.
right? So like there's seams and it's kind of sketchy, and you got to ride the top, and you literally, like you said, you can't lose your focus ever. Like the long road course tracks, like Road America, right? Like you get on the front straight, and you know, maybe you're like relax your hands a little bit,
yeah.
Like, mental laps, like get on the radio or something, but. 22-second lap, like I'm sure you've even done shorter.
Well, way shorter, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. 13-second laps.
Yeah, that's absurd. But yeah. you literally can't make a mistake. It's awesome.
Right. So now you are locked in. IndyCar is the goal or bust, or is it you still kind of eyes looking elsewhere?
Oh, like I will definitely always look elsewhere. If I'm driving something with four wheels and making a living, like I'll be beyond happy. You know, that's
sure.
that's living the dream. So. IndyCar is, you know, the plan A, my primary focus. I mean, I'm also in school. We talked about that before we went on air, but...
Right. So what are you taking in school?
Auto Eng.
Okay. First year? Second year?
Second year. I'm okay. actually, yeah, I just finished my first semester of second year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what's auto engineering?
So and it's actually a cool program. So it's at Ontario Tech in Oshawa. It's okay. a relatively new school.
Oh, they got a wind tunnel there.
Dude. World's largest climactic wind tunnel.
Cool.
Yeah. No, it's nice. I haven't been in it yet, but I want to, hopefully like third and fourth year. But it's a lot of like the base courses. So first and second year, like what I'm in right now, it's all the same as like mechanical eng or like civil engineering. It's all like
right. basics.
Calc, physics, like the stuff that everybody hates.
Yeah.
And then third and fourth year will be like vehicle dynamics and like electric motors. And the curriculum is actually really cool. And it's the only accredited program where you get a degree in the country for auto eng.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So more hands-on than, you know, just going off to university.
Yeah.
And then you actually get some application. So where are you going to, do you do like a placement, try and go to Multimatic or something?
That would be cool. But here's the thing, if I'm racing, I don't know if I'll have time to do co-op, right?
Right.
I might skip it.
Right, right.
Yeah, and then just do like my capstone project. So like in your fourth year, you do capstone, which is like something you have to develop by yourself. And it's like this, you know, really big, like summative kind of like... I guess feather in your cap in terms of like university and degree.
Right, right. So like an applied thesis to some degree.
It would be really cool. I'm pumped. For sure it's going to be on racing, but I don't know what yet.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So tell me about your kind of program or how Hinchcliffe's involved in, you know, your program, I guess.
So Speed Group is kind of like my management team.
Okay.
And Hinch has been involved with them for a while, but they haven't really been super public about it, like and I'm kind of the first driver that they've, you know, come out and publicly supported, especially James.
Okay.
And working with him has just been like a pleasure, dude. Like
yeah.
I'll text back and forth with him about like the most random stuff, you know, away from racing. And then also I'll be like, hey, do you remember when you ran IndyCar in 2015 at NOLA in turn five and you were like missing the apex? Was that intentional? Like,
yeah.
It just, you know, it's a friendship, but it's also like a mentorship at its highest level. So just having him has been awesome.
For sure, and I guess the unique Canadian perspective as well, like mm-hmm. trying to make it in the States and like how to go about finding sponsorship and I guess maybe even Canadian sponsors, bringing them down in the States, like all that stuff, right?
Really good point that you bring up, because it's hard, like we touched on it earlier, when you're racing in the States, getting, you know, Canadian companies or Canadian money to back you, right? Because you're not racing in Canada. So they don't want to do it. But I mean, he definitely has a unique perspective on that. And there's definitely comfort in knowing that he's done it before.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And like that also pertains to like the racetrack, like this year, the Toronto Indy, our weekend was going really well until it wasn't. You know, turn three and the Lakeshore can get you. Last few laps of the race. Got me.
Did someone get you or did you get yourself?
Someone got me.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, he was there, you know, to see me after the race. And, like, I don't know, for some strange reason, just knowing that he's been through things like that before, like, helps so much when you're a young driver.
For sure. For sure, yeah. The highs and lows of racing, man. It's the biggest hammer to the ego there is.
For sure.
You know, you're sitting, and it's just, it gets taken away from you in a second. And you're just in disbelief, you know?
You're literally sitting there, like, spun around backwards. Like, I went from, like, possibly winning my home race, first time I've, you know, been at home in 3 years, and now I'm, like, sitting in the concrete, and it's, like, it just sits, it settles in, and you're, like, oh, my God.
Yeah, and you just, you got to suck it up.
That's the way it is. You got to move on to the next one, right?
Right. So, how are you going about, because I'm always, like, really curious on this, because I work on sponsorship deals and all that stuff. Like, how are you going about this year? Are you trying to find, so in my mind, you know, selling sponsorship, if it can fully pay for itself and make sense for the company, it's like, okay, here it is, it's a no-brainer, you guys have to do this, being a B2B deal, something like that. Are you trying to put together any B2B deals?
All the time. It's the best way and the most sustainable way, I think, to get like proper partnership in racing, because without it, like, the return is not tangible all the time, right?
Right, like are your races televised?
Not yet. Okay. No. So it's tough. So, it's hard to sell, man.
Right.
So you need that B2B, right?
Yeah.
You want to get people to the track. You want to get them in like a hospitality suite like we did last year, and get people talking and try to make a benefit for them that way, because, you know, that's like an actual ROI.
Right. Right. So like to, I guess, like explicitly say, like, you know, if some company A is buying a bunch of a product and you can connect company B that's selling all that product and say, okay, you guys do X amount of business, you'd probably pay a commission on this type of business anyways. And now these two companies, the commission goes to your sponsorship.
You got it.
And it, you know, it makes sense. And now you have, you know, a good relationship with these two companies and they could jointly or, you know, singularly be on your car and it's a no-brainer. You got to do it.
Yeah. Right? It's awesome for them and it's awesome for you. And it's something that can last a long time, right? That's a long-term partnership that for, you know, someone in my situation, like I could take that all the way to IndyCar.
Right. Right. What kind of stuff, what kind of B2B stuff are you working on right now?
So one of my primary sponsors, Valkyrie AI, they're out of Austin. So they do like custom AI solutions. Like,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I didn't really know, you know, a lot about that world until they literally sat me down in their boardroom and like, okay, this is what we do. So like between like Activision, like Call of Duty, or I forget what the acronym is, but like basically the emergency services in Austin, like they work with some really big organizations to do some really cool stuff. So connecting people with that kind of new technology, you know, that's an interest of ours and we're always trying to put together deals that way. And then Actuary Risk Management, also based out of Austin, who I met through Valkyrie, funny enough.
Okay, yeah.
So, you know, you can kind of see how that builds off each other. They're like a big actuary, and they do like risk analysis.
Yeah.
So there's those kind of two outlets that, you know, I will, or, you know, my team will pitch to people that might want to come on board, and, you know, we can see if we can make something work.
Right, right. So you have a manager?
My manager's like my dad.
Okay.
Like, he's not official, right. But he's, you know, we bounce ideas all the time off of Speed Group. So that's Hinch, Tony Calderon, who was a manager in the IndyCar scene for a long time, still heavily involved in, like, you know, motorsport. And then David Martinez, who's part owner of my team that I actually race for.
Okay.
So it's those three guys, and my dad's the main guy, and we just kind of all bounce ideas off each other and see what sticks.
So how many emails or cold calls are you making, or is that group making, you know, a year?
It's a lot, man. I mean, it's definitely in the tens. You just have to put your name out there. And, like, that pertains to, like, cold calls, like you said, but also in the paddock as well, like, meeting people, shaking hands, always being seen. If you're not trying, I don't think you're going to make it, right? So it's a steady grind. Racing is a full-time job at this level.
For sure. So are you doing a lot of your courses online?
No.
Okay.
I'm doing them, like, I'm actually living on campus right now.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm renting a place on campus. I have five roommates. It's kind of crazy.
Nice. I had five roommates too.
Yeah, it's a good time. But I'm in school full time, yeah.
Okay. What is the road to racing? I see that
yeah.
you're like some sort of program you're in or
yeah, so Road to Racing Canada is actually like the first of its kind. It's a motorsport charity founded largely by Neil Braun as a gentleman out of Western Canada. And it is a new way to kind of bring funds into your program. So the way it works is if you have more of a personal sponsor, more of like a philanthropy type thing instead of a corporate sponsorship,
okay,
they can donate funds through Road to Racing and then they'll get like a charitable tax receipt back. So it's a non-for-profit.
Got it.
And it's a way to support, you know, Canadian race car drivers because only in the last few years, it's like, it's a CRA, right? It's like the
yep.
thing in Canada.
Yeah, Canadian Revenue Agency.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You got to figure it out.
I pay taxes.
Yeah. They only in the last few years have recognized race car drivers as athletes, as like amateur athletes. So that's how the whole thing was, you know, able to open up.
Right. So it's probably some sort of spin-off of like... Well, I guess amateur athletes, but like, yeah, Olympic type athletes
exactly.
or something
yeah.
like that. Interesting. So it's a charity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. It's like a not-for-profit charity. So, you can bring in funds that way. And then, anyone who donates will get a charitable tax receipt, just like donating to another large charitable organization.
Right. So are you still doing karting to train? Are you doing a bunch of sim racing to train?
It's a lot of sim racing. It's a lot of gym time. I wish I was still, you know, kind of in the karting scene. But, I mean, between, like, the cost and the risk of injury, I don't really think it's worth it, you know,
sure.
as much as I would love to do it.
Right. You have a sim setup at home?
I do, yeah. It's actually on campus. So I moved it on campus. It's, like, crammed in my little room.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
in
yeah.
the past, like, 2 months. And I've got, like, heavy back into iRacing because...
You let your drunk roommates get on that thing?
No chance, bro. Yeah. I keep that thing like locked up tight. Like, you know, a lot of people use it, but like, I'll be there to supervise. Like, there's no chance you're gonna ruin my sim rig.
Yeah, no doubt. Is it? Do you have three screens?
Yeah, I'm a big triple monitor guy. Yeah.
Okay.
It takes up some space.
Yeah, no doubt. On campus.
Oh yeah,
that's
yeah.
insane.
Up like two flights of stairs. Mm-hmm.
Did you assemble it up there? Or did you carry it up?
I took it apart into like five pieces. And then, yeah, put it back together.
That's crazy.
No, I committed hardcore.
So you've got, like, I remember in school, like, you've got nothing but time, really. I wasn't taking engineering.
Are you taking notes in class or doing homework or what, bro? Like,
I don't know. I did a bunch of other stuff during university, you know, renovating a house at one point. But you must have, like, unlimited time at night to be on iRacing.
Oh, yeah.
Are you on there every night?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
if it's not every night, it's every other night, and I only got it back in there like a month ago, but I've been heavy on it since.
Right,
so I'm gonna be missing it throughout. Like, we're recording this around Christmas,
yeah.
So I'm like home back in Milton, so I'm gonna be missing my sim rig for like the next like 2-3 weeks. Right.
Your dad doesn't have one?
No, dude. I'm trying to get him into it. He jumped on the sim for the first time like 2 weeks ago, and he actually enjoyed it. I mean, he knows how to drive, so
yeah.
It's just like, you know, sometimes like the older generation is like, oh, I don't know about sim racing, and then they try it, and they're like, oh, this is actually really cool.
Yeah. I got my dad a setup and he's still pretty frustrated with it. I think.
It's different. It's not real racing.
No, because you just like, you know, if you're losing it, you're already so far behind where
oh, yeah.
you would be in a car. Like, it's just some of the cars like are undrivable.
Oh, 100%. And like, it's not driving. Like, for those who might not be race car drivers that are listening, but if you're in the motorsport world, you kind of know that, like, drivers feel a lot of stuff, like, through our lower back and our butt. Like,
yeah.
that's kind of how it goes. But when you drive in the sim, it's like driving with your eyes. Like, you got no real feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, the wheel helps a little bit, but, like, you got the tire sound cranked up, like, to know if the car is pushing or, yeah. like, yeah. Yeah. It's not easy. I was helping. So the NASCAR did that big E-Race, did you see that recently?
No.
It was stupid. It was, I think Dale Jr. did it, a bunch of, not many cup guys, and then like NASCAR Brazil, NASCAR Euro, and NASCAR Canada, and they did the LA Coliseum in an Xfinity car.
So it was a disaster.
A disaster. And then Brands Hatch, the Indy track, the short
no
track
way.
in an Xfinity car. So I was on there. Timmers ran it. So I was on there with Timmers running laps. But like, that thing was just undrivable. It's crazy.
That's awesome.
So do you think it, I mean, it helps in some way, but like, I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you think sim racing mm-hmm. helps.
In terms of like learning how to drive a specific car, it's never going to be that great. Like, it's, you know, there's like sim racing and then real racing somewhere up here, but they're never going to be like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's always going to be a gap of kind of like unknown. I think it's really good just for staying in the right mentality as a race car driver, right? So the opening laps, if you put it on pole to try to pull away, or like the late race defensive moves that you're going to have to pull if you want to keep the win, like
right.
all of the motions that you go through mentally are still the same. You know, driving might be a little bit different, but I think just in terms of staying sharp, it's really good. And then if you're going to go to a new circuit, you know, iRacing does a pretty good job in terms of like laser scanning tracks. So, yeah. you know, if there's a bump in turn one, you know, at the apex in real life, like it's going to be a similar size in real life than it is, you know, on the sim. So it is helpful that way too.
Yeah, I think for sure. Like the biggest thing is learning tracks. Like we did the Le Mans Classic race this year, and it was like, I didn't know Le Mans at all. Like, yeah. And it took hours on the sim to learn the track. Mm-hmm. And if I didn't do that,
you've been lost, right?
Lost. Yeah. Like, I, you know, the amount of chicanes that look the same, but then, mm-hmm. you know, go the other way. Like, it's almost a 5-minute lap, a 4.5-minute lap in that car. Like, crazy. So, yeah, I agree with you. Like, I think maybe even... it would probably help even more on like the short track oval stuff. Like, cause so much of that is just hitting your mark every lap.
Like repetition almost.
Yeah. Not losing focus, getting in a rhythm, like, you know, and bringing that intensity. Cause like sometimes you can get in a car and like almost be a little lazy sometimes, you know?
Yeah. You haven't driven in, you know, maybe a month or two or three, and you get back in the car and, things are kind of foreign and you're just slow to start off, right? You want to get there and you want to be like on right away.
Right. Right. We got a call with Peter Lockhart here.
Nice.
Should we dial him in?
Peter, yeah.
It's the first phone call on
no way.
First phone call on the podcast. I'll just put him up to the mic here.
I've been here for 20 minutes and I'm already causing problems.
Oh, it's been longer than 20 already. You sent me his number here. We'll see how this goes. He recognizes my number. Duncan, there's probably a way we could have plugged this in, but Peter.
Hi.
It's Gary Clute. How are you?
Fine, Gary. How are you?
Good, good, good. I'm just sitting here with Mac. We're live on a podcast right now.
Okay.
So
this is great because I've seen Mac do this before. He's becoming quite stellar at it.
You flatter me, Peter. You flatter me.
Yeah, he's good. I told him that you have to be... we've just been telling jokes the entire time, so you have to be equally as funny or else we're not going to put this in.
Well, yeah. Can we start with my life is a joke?
Okay, that works. That works. Tell us about the program that you've got Mac in there at the Canadian Motorsport Hall of Fame.
Yes, absolutely. Mac is the 2022... rising star of the Canadian Motorsport Hall of Fame. This is an award that is established to showcase and bring attention to somebody young who is doing extremely well in motorsport and has an intention, with the intention of making a career out of it. We started this award in 2016, and Mac is our latest recipient. Of course, we will have a 2023. That's not announced as yet, but you know, when we look at Mac, we look at and many of us look at Mac as a young Greg Moore, and he exemplifies, you know, all that's really terrific about young Canadians in motorsport.
That's great. That's great. So, you guys brought him up there, gave him an award, and then I guess the upside is helps him as far as recognition goes amongst, you know, Canadian companies, American companies, I guess, in the motorsport world as well, teams.
Exactly. Absolutely. You know, it's just another feather in the cap of the recognition by peers of an up-and-comer. We certainly hope that it helps them, you know, in terms of others and corporations looking at them and recognizing that we see our rising stars as a role model for those who, you know, have come from the past, and that he will be one going into the future.
Very good. Very good. Cool. Well, I'll let you go unless you have anything else prepared for us.
No, not really. Other than to say that we're extremely thrilled with where Mac is going. There's a lot of Canadian support that has come behind him. And it's a, you know, the more that the Mac Clarks of this world can do well, it helps other young kids who are getting involved in the sport to do the same. And we're immensely proud of his performance and where it's going. And we wish him the very best. And thank you for having him on your show.
Oh, my pleasure. And we'll have to get you in the studio soon. We can rehash your career.
Yeah, well, is there time for that?
Loads of time. We can do 3-4 hours.
So there's more comedy in that, of course, than there is in anything, right?
Oh, I don't know. You could beat Taglianni's time as the longest podcast yet, so...
I don't know if I want to do that.
That's good. All right, Peter, we appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Thanks so much, and best of the season to you both and to all of your families.
Thank you. Merry Christmas. Cheers. Oh, that's good.
He's wicked.
Yeah, yeah. I got to get him on. Like, he was, and he's probably a great guy, like, for, I don't know how much you've chatted with him. Like, he was the man at finding sponsorship.
Oh, awesome. Like, have you seen his car from back in the day? Like,
yeah,
he had like the Sony hand cam on there, and I think like at some other point, I'm trying to think, like, what are their big names?
That's the only one I remember, just because it's cool.
I know.
Sony deal.
No, there was like a lot of cool stuff going on like back in that film era.
Like Kodak or like cam or something else. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, yeah, but interesting.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So we were saying before, I was saying I'm trying to bulk up in the gym, and said you're in the gym probably, yeah, not trying to bulk up because you're in sports car racing, but or in open wheel racing. But tell me about your gym program.
I get in trouble for trying to bulk up. I bring it up to my engineer every once in a while. I'm like, John, like, you know, can I gain 10 pounds? He's like, no.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, like, come on. I started, you know, taking the gym really seriously only about a year and a half ago. I'd always, you know, struggled on and off, like, you know, just not having the correct program. And I met a guy down in Indianapolis who worked at Pit Fit, which is like, you know, the gym for, you know, all of the drivers that live in India.
Yeah, for sure.
And he's since separated. He's doing his own thing. So I'm with him, and his thing's called Pearl Perform.
Okay.
So he literally just like programs custom workouts for me. And it's since, like, you know, just helped me stay on track and finally like find love in the gym. Like, I look forward to it now. Like, it's like, you know, the highlight of my day sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm at school and like you fit for in sure. between class. Like, it's just, that's where I want to be. So, I mean, I've gained like 10, 15 pounds in the last year. And I think I've seen a lot of changes, especially with how my body feels once I get out of the car after a long race. And I don't think people realize, you know, how physical. Another thing, right? Like, people don't give ovals enough credit. They say it's easy just to turn left. Like, people say it's easy to drive a race car.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, especially some of the oval stuff. Like, you're, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. Do you have your head padded? Or are you,
yeah,
you resting it against the side?
Yeah. I do, okay. Yeah. No, I'm hardcore leaning up. Like, my lap, like, 60 to 75 is like... Yeah, using the head.
Yeah, because eventually you have to, but, you know, I usually start the race, you know, holding your head up, right? And so you're doing a bunch of neck stuff?
I am, yeah. It's weird. Like, people give me funny looks in the gym, but I don't care.
Right, right. Doing neck exercises, you look like a maniac.
Yeah, a little bit, right? Like Jim Warrior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Trying to grow your neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, either you're a race car driver or you play rugby.
Yeah, one or the other, right? What about you in the bulk? Like, what's going on there?
I don't know.
There?
Come on, it's just for fun.
Let the fans in.
I don't know. I like being in the gym, and it's like there's this one point in the year between the end of race season and call it Christmas where it's like, okay, I can try and gain muscle. And to gain muscle, dude, you've got to just eat like a crazy person.
Insane how much you have to eat to see actual weight gain.
For sure. So I've been eating like a madman, like meals before bed and stuff. So
nice.
I'm up like... 9 pounds?
Yeah, dude, that's solid.
And then, you know, the winter, you know, comes around and it's like January, February, and it's like, okay, well, you can't be fat going into race season, so got to get on the bicycle again and like go back to just steak and eggs and lose all of that weight, and hopefully you end up with like maybe a pound of muscle.
Exactly, right? You end up more chiseled, better off for it.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just like lifting weights, and it's like, it's fun and it's an excuse to just eat a bunch of food and experiment, but it's tough and you don't feel super good. Like, I think everyone's body has like an equilibrium of like where mm-hmm. they want to be, and like to really push the envelope, like, or to move that equilibrium, you've got to be pretty drastic.
Yeah, it is a little bit uncomfortable for sure. Like, I went through a phase where I was trying to eat, like, you know, 150, 175 grams of protein a day to gain, like, weight.
Yeah.
And it did work, but, like, you know, it's not easy.
Yeah.
It's definitely a commitment, so.
Do you, is there a, like, how do they weigh you guys? Do they weigh you guys and the car, or do they just weigh the car?
They weigh us separate, yeah. So, okay. Like, there's definitely a certain weight that my engineer wants me to hover around.
Sure.
You know, with all my gear on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't really afford to gain any more weight than I have now if I want to keep it, like, you know, the situation ideal, right?
Sure, yeah, yeah. And, like, pretty much, and maybe it's for the balance of the car or whatever, but, like, for us, like, we can put weight pretty much anywhere. So, like,
yeah.
I should be just as light as possible.
Yeah.
Right?
No, yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, or maybe on some of the ovals you could be a little fat and have some good left side weight. But do you do anything else as far as, you're still so young, like I was thinking, like longevity, right? Like sauna, cold tub, any of that stuff?
No, to be honest. I mean, I've only
just, like, feel good all the time.
Yeah, 19, kinda. Yeah. You know what I mean? 19, like, you can wake up in the morning, just go for it. Like, I've only started taking stretching really seriously the past few months because, like, I had some issues with my knees where I was, like, overlifting. It wasn't great for my legs.
Sure.
But I'm, you know, I'm learning all the time in terms of, like, my fitness regimen. And what I usually do is, like, I'll do one day as, like, a full body lift, and then I'll do, you know, the next day cardio. And cardio can be, like, aerobic training, so just kind of building the heart, you know, something more in, like, the 150 heart rate range
zone,
for, like,
zone two,
yeah. Exactly, zone two for, like, you know, an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then some cardio days will be, like, intense interval training. So Sam, my trainer, likes to switch it up, and I mean, you know, he's been a real blessing for me, because I mean, without him, I don't think I would have found, you know, the love for the gym.
For sure, those guys are nuts, the PitFit type guys. Like,
Sam's yoked, bro.
Yeah,
like, crazy.
Yeah, and all those guys work out so hard. Like, I don't know if your plan is ever to move to Indy, is it?
Hopefully. That would be a good problem to have, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We're doing a vintage race down there. It was, like, it was actually a pro-am. I was with Bobby Labonte, and he's a big cyclist, which I didn't realize.
Okay.
He told these stories where he had to sneak out of the hauler, like, so, like, Earnhardt wouldn't see him in his, you know, Lycra, you know, and get made fun of.
That's wicked.
But, I brought my bike down because I was going to ride with Dalton and the PitFit guys.
Yeah.
And, I ride a lot now, but back then I just really started riding, and Dalton takes me on this stupid ride with this group of the PitFit guys, and, like, I am sucking gas, like, I'm barely hanging on, and they're like, Gary, you gotta come up and lead, it's your turn, and I'm like,
no,
and we do, like, whatever, 30 miles or something, and they're like, okay, one more loop, like, another one, and I'm like, I can't do 60 miles today. I was broken off. I had to go back. I'd, like, hobbled into Sam's Club trying to find, like, protein shakes or something. Like, I'm not going to be able to race tomorrow. Yeah, those guys are hardcore. And all those IndyCar guys ride bikes.
Yeah, they're all big cyclists. Like, that's not something that I've been big on, only because, like, I live on campus and, you know, half the year here it's freezing cold. So, yeah. Like, I'll get on the stationary bike and I'll do it that way. But, you know, road cycling is definitely something I could see myself taking up in the future. Cause I mean, like you said, they all do it.
Yeah, dude, you'll get hooked. Cause it's so good. Like, the draft is just so
it's kinda
good.
Like racing, no? Like
100%. I find myself, like, at night watching YouTube videos of, like, some guy has a little GoPro on his bike, and like the racecraft in cycling is, I don't think there's even in, like, I don't know, what would you say is the best racecraft or best, like, racing to watch, like, end of a four cycle race, like a on the race,
like,
or something. Right.
Something like that.
But cycling's even more, like, you know, this guy's trying to position here and he's got to get up
very
to, like,
strategic.
10th for, like, the final sprint, and, like, you go too early and you're just gassed, and, like, this guy's just sitting on the third place till, like, 100 meters to go and then pulls out. Like, the draft is it's cool. Yeah it's fun.
No, I've seen, like, one of my coaches, Mateus Leist, who's a former IndyCar driver, he's, like, heavy into cycling, and he bought, like, this crazy carbon bike, and, like, you can, like, pick it up with your pinky, dude. Like, it weighs nothing. Like, the technology that's behind that, too, it interests me.
Right. I guess I'm trying to calculate. You're probably a little younger than those guys. Did you race karts against, like, Stroll or Latifi growing up?
I'm younger, yeah.
Okay.
Never. I think my dad raced, like, Latifi. I don't know about Stroll.
Okay, yeah. I guess Latifi's a little bit older, yeah.
Yeah, but no, yeah. I met Nick for the first time, like, 2 years ago in Austin, Texas, when he was racing, and, like, super, super cool guy, nice family.
Yeah.
You know, representing Canada.
Yeah, so he's done now.
Yeah,
he's going
I don't
to
know.
School.
Is that what it is, yeah, right? He's going to business school or something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, that's cool. So is there like a you know, a fallback plan or like plan B, plan C? I mean, you are going to university. Yeah.
Dad was always the one to say, I will support your racing career and I will, you know, put this investment in you, but you have to promise me that you'll go to school and get a degree. Mm. Which, like, honestly, I thank him for that, because I think, you know, that's a great plan for me and, you know, for my long-term, I guess, like, longevity, right? Because being a race car driver can't last you forever. Nope. And that's, you know, hopefully if I make it. So I put racing as my plan A.
Sure.
And, I mean, I try not to even think about the plan B. But, you know, that engineering degree will be my fallback plan, you know, if we don't make it to IndyCar. I always, right, like, say to people, if I don't win the Indy 500 from the driver's seat, I'll be on the pit wall and I'll still be getting that ring either way.
Right. So you're that, you love racing that much, whereas if you're not the driver, you're going to be there still.
Hands down.
For sure. So yeah, your plan B is still to be in the paddock working in motorsports.
Yeah.
Cool. And in IndyCar?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I'm biased because it's where I'm headed, but I think the racing in IndyCar, especially in terms of open wheel, is like the best on the planet. Like, yeah, you know, more of a spec series. You never know who's going to win. The competitiveness, I guess, of the field is, you know, insane.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like, I love watching IndyCar for that reason. It's, mm-hmm, you don't know who's going to win, you know? Yeah,
F1, it's like, oh, Max and Red Bull, you know?
Yeah, yeah, you know for sure. And that's why I love, like, NASCAR too. Like, NASCAR and IndyCar, exactly, they've done such a good job of, like, you don't know. You can't put your money on who's going to win. Like, that's crazy.
It's so entertaining. Like, yeah, that's what racing should be. And not to, like, knock on Formula 1 at all. Like, I love Formula 1.
It's
but
the pinnacle.
It is the pinnacle, and it always will be. And there's reasons why it can't be like IndyCar or NASCAR.
Yeah.
But my one, you know, selling point to, because a lot of people, like, got into F1 through Drive to Survive, right? Like, there's a lot of new fans.
Crazy.
So my argument to them on, like, come watch IndyCar, like, you don't have to have been on F1, come watch IndyCar, is you don't know who's going to win. Like, that's the point I always harp on, is, like, it's, you know, a lot more exciting.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, like, it's funny, like, sponsors will ask me, I'm sure that you as well, like, so where are you gonna run? Like, how are we gonna do it? It's like, I don't know, we'll be fast, but, like, you know, there's a couple pit stops, yellow flags, like, we don't know.
Right? Lots of variables in there, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not like I don't even know, like, hockey or, you know, tennis or something where you, like, ranked better fighting or something, but yeah, there's always upsets. Man, tell people where they can follow you. And I guess before that, you know, along those lines of where they can follow you, social media is so massive. Like, it's so massive, and there's so much value there for sponsors. And even if your series isn't on TV, the eyeballs aren't even on TV. People are watching TV, but they're looking at their phone, mm-hmm, right? Do you have a plan to grow your social media or YouTube or whatever it may be?
First off, you're really good at this. Those are, like, great questions. I can just tell, man, that you've been doing this for, like, you said almost 2 years, right?
Almost 2 years now.
No, like, that's, like, an awesome question. I love that. In terms of socials, like you said, it brings an insane value to sponsors, right? Because it's eyeballs.
Right.
So I've been trying to grow my social media platforms, you know, since I was, like, 15, 16 years old. Have I done the best job in the world? Probably not. But as I'm getting, you know, more and more exposure to what it should look like, you know, getting resources from different people and different groups, I think I am starting to get better at it. Mm. My main focus is Instagram. I think, you know, that's where there's a lot of eyeballs. I am on TikTok. I'm not very good at it. But again, something I'm trying to work on. So there's programs, you know, that'll help you kind of learn more about social media. Like, I'm thinking about taking a course. Or,
it's like a full-time job.
It's a full-time job. Yeah. Like, to be honest, between being a race car driver and, you know, trying to get a degree and, like, you know, all the things that come with being a race car driver, it's a lot. So social media has always, you know, been kind of the thing I put on the back burner.
Sure.
Kind of ashamed of that, but it's something I want to get better at.
Yeah, and man, like, a guy like Hinch does so well on it, right? Oh, like, he's like funny,
so,
like,
good, man,
all that stuff, and he comes up with these great ideas. Like, do you think part of what was holding you back is, I mean, I guess still being so young, but, like, being super candid and vulnerable and, like, silly in front of the camera, like, you know, authenticity is what works, right?
Oh, yeah,
and
being
it's
yourself.
So hard to, you know, film something goofy like that and put it out there.
You're
like,
yeah,
everyone's going to laugh at me or whatever, right?
Definitely when I was younger. Like, I feel like as I've, I've been racing for what, 8 years now, like we said.
Yeah.
I'd say like the last like three, I've only got good at like public speaking or, you know, like, you know, being, you know,
sure,
kind of funny in front of a camera.
Yeah.
Trying my best at it at least. So it's for sure, earlier it was hard. Like, I didn't want to post things. Like, right. Oh, what if it makes me look bad or look like an idiot? Like, blah, blah, blah.
Your friends in high school, you're going to get ripped on anyway.
Dude, always. Like, you walk into school the next day, you walk into like algebra class at 9 a.m.
What the hell was that, dude?
Yes, yeah. Literally. Like, I'd post like promo videos for like karting, and it would just like, it literally got turned into a meme at my high school in like the 10th or 11th grade. It was awesome.
What was the meme?
It was this video I did filming for Supernats. It was like this promo video. And everyone just thought of it was like the funniest thing, because when you're in like 10th and 11th grade, nobody knows how to like speak professionally in front of a camera.
Right.
But here I was like looking like, I don't know, like
collared shirt.
Yeah,
standing
collared shirt. Yeah. Like I'm on the late show, like talking about Supernats, like sounding like I'm giving like a conference room, you know, interview or press conference, something like that. So it was, it went around pretty quick, but.
Right. Yeah. The social media thing is crazy. And it's like, you know, I was talking to, do you know who Chase Cabry is?
I do not.
Yeah, he's going to be, I'll release his podcast today or tomorrow.
Okay, I'll
he's Haley Deegan's fiance, and okay. He runs her whole YouTube channel.
That's massive.
And it's massive, right? Like, that's, they're making a living doing that, right?
Yeah.
And he's like, dynamite guy, like, you know, shoots it, comes up with the ideas, edits
it. He's a genius.
Yeah, like, and works like a dog, right? Like, mm-hmm. If you're doing two videos a week, that's crazy. But he was telling me, like, I think I got this right. Like, the numbers, like, there's way more value in their socials than the Truck Series sponsorship.
I'm not surprised.
Right? And it's like, if you could build something that big, now, you know, you still have to work your butt off to find sponsors. But, mm-hmm. like, you go, look, I've got double the value of anyone else in this series. You know, and she's probably got more, right? Yeah. Like, you know, then it's just like a B2B deal. It's like, hey, this is a no-brainer. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be here anyways, like, look at this media empire I have. Does that entice you to go all in on that, or is it just a factor of you don't have the time?
Yes, no, I'd say it does entice me. Like, that's something I want to be able to leverage.
Yeah.
It's such a powerful tool. And if I could, time is a factor, but if I could find a way to fit it into my daily routine or just come up with a system, you know, where I actually get organized and get my stuff together, I feel like it could be fun. Like you said, if you're yourself, like, mm-hmm. you know, there's going to be people that like you and people that don't like you regardless.
Yeah.
But if you do a good job and, you know, you post the right content and you be yourself, I don't see why it can't take off and be successful and also be your biggest asset, because nobody can take that away from you either, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know the numbers. Like, how many IndyCar guys have a YouTube channel?
Not a high number.
Okay.
Not a high number.
I'm trying to think. Probably more NASCAR guys probably do. Yeah.
No, I want to start posting, like, YouTube content and start getting into that, all that. But I feel like I need more resources. Like, I'd love to have, like, I don't know.
It cool sounds, shit to film is what you need, right?
Yeah, right? Like, you know, sitting around campus, like, exam season, I lock myself in my room for, like, 3 weeks. Like, what am I going to post during that? You know what I mean? But I got to farm content during the season. I got to get it ready. I got to come up with a plan. But I want to have someone to help me with that and really take it to the next level. But I think I just have to get better at it by myself right now.
Yeah, that too. And I think, yeah, you could certainly have, like, a mentor, like, someone who's done it before. Like, mm-hmm. who's like, I know how to go viral. Like,
yeah.
Let's do this, this, and this. And it's going to be some goofy shit probably. Yeah. But, like, man, like, how good is it? Yeah, Jordan Taylor?
He's wicked.
Yeah, like, how good is his stuff?
Yeah.
Like, hilarious. Like, funny, funny dude. Right? And, like, he didn't really need to be doing that. But, no. Like, it made, you know, now everyone knows who he is. Everyone in the NASCAR world knows who he is. He's getting cup rides.
Yeah.
You know, because guys know who he is.
Yeah, no, it's a super powerful tool, and I want to use it to my advantage and have fun doing it, right? Like, it's not all about, you know, securing your next ride, right? Like,
yeah.
It's also a journey.
For sure. Well, tell the people where they can find you.
So I'm at @MattClark on Instagram. That's my biggest channel. And then the same on Facebook, actually. Matt Clark Racing on YouTube, but my YouTube channel is small. I want to start posting again. I've been inactive. So that's where you can find me. I'm trying to post, like, regularly now.
Yeah.
Like, literally within, like, the last, like, 2 months, I'm making an effort to really crank it up before the next year.
Good. Well, I'll give you some clips here.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Yeah, great. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. See you guys next week.